Next talk will be by Dr. David Clark from the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. Most of you probably know who Dave Clark is. He has been involved in an activity known as FIND, Future Internet Directions, and is going to be talking today about the requirements motivated by experimentation. So just give him a minute to get set up. Do you have your dongle?
I do. Ta-da. Someday this will all be wireless plug and play, and you can take over my talk in the middle by taking over my wireless connection and all kinds of wonderful things. Ha! That lighthouse is off Rockport, Massachusetts. So what I'm going to talk about today are requirements. This is not a talk about mechanism in the context of building Genie. This is a talk about requirements. And let me explain to you where this set of requirements comes from. For the last perhaps 4 years, there's been a research activity inside the National Science Foundation called FIND, an acronym which is usually expanded to Future Internet Design, although we could debate the use of the letter I. Programmatically, FIND has now been folded into a larger NSF program called NETSI, but in terms of a collaborative activity, in terms of convenings of like-minded people, FIND is still a very active program. We're having a meeting next week. We have collaborators from other parts of the globe coming to these meetings. And the point about FIND is to ask this long-term challenge question, which is, what do we think the internet should look like in 15 years? If you go back to the very beginning of Genie, it was the set of researchers who wanted to ask that question, which is, what should the world look like in the future? It was actually the driver for building an infrastructure such as Genie. Just to give you a little bit of scale, I think there's something like 150 PIs funded as part of FIND. I think there's like 45 distinct, I mean, I pulled that number out of the air, but I think I'm right, about 45 distinct activities inside, grants inside FIND. And if you look at that, you will find that the research spans all the way from people who are looking at technology issues, and FIND is not primarily about technology. FIND funded technology research when it appeared that the technology might be novel enough that it would have an impact on the larger architecture of the network. Wireless shows up in that case. People wanted to do cross-layer design, advanced optics. There's some work at what I might call the classic network layer, and it is supposed to go all the way up to include application design and socio-technical issues. That's the scope of FIND. And in that context, all of the FIND researchers at the time they submitted a proposal were asked to provide a little addendum, which just said, how would you test your ideas? Would you test them using a simulator, paper and pencil, infrastructure? And if you wanted infrastructure, what would its characteristics be? And what I'm going to try to talk about today are the kinds of requirements that came up out of that process, as well as some conversations we've had and so forth. So I'm going to say some things that are my point of view, but to a large extent, I'm drawing on that body of material which all of the FIND researchers contributed. And as I said, I'm not going to talk about how you would build mechanism to address these requirements. I'm actually going to make my mechanism comments in the form of questions, which is, what would happen if we did this versus that? What are the trade-offs of doing things in various ways? Now, if you go back in the history to the pre-GPO period, there was actually a document called the Science Plan or the Research Plan. It oscillated between those two titles for programmatic reasons. which actually listed various requirements for an infrastructure. And I think those requirements haven't changed. And if you go back to the description of Genie at the time, this is, I say, sort of the pre-GPO version, I believe there was to some extent a mismatch between the set of requirements that had been put forward and the infrastructure as characterized. Now, I don't know whether that statement is still true, because in fact I haven't been closely following the evolution of Genie for the last year or so, but I'm going to try to bring out the issues in that space and see how they play against the way Genie's currently being built. Now let me give you some general requirements, which I think are understood, but if I'm trying to tell the fine story, I want to begin at the beginning. There's a strong sense that we want to build a real network. You don't want routers in a rack. You want physically a wide reach, and the reason you want to do this is you want to get to what I would call the real edges. And the reason you want to get to the real edges is you're interested, for some definition of these words, in reaching real users. Now, there's an interesting challenge there. What does it mean to go all the way to the edge? What does it mean to have a Genie-like infrastructure go all the way to my desktop or to my wireless device or to my sensor or something like that? And I think that there's actually been some variation in how that objective gets interpreted. There's a tension in getting to real users, which is how realistic is the infrastructure you're using. If you're trying to build an infrastructure that is very technologically rich, then the question is how widespread can that deployment be? And I'll try to illustrate that in a minute. And of course, the last requirement is long-running experiments. We don't just want to do a demo on Tuesday. We want to bring up experiments which can last for months. Because if you're going to try to attract real users to come and do real things, it has to stay there. So there's a requirement for stability, longevity, but also the ability to run more than one experiment at once. These are not, I assume, surprising. So in this context, let me give you a background comment here. If you go out and talk to people about the range of experiments you want to do, you get a wide range of requirements coming back. And a lot of these experiments could be posed as things to be done on Genie. And I think that you have to look at this fairly carefully in terms of whether you can build what I would call a fully general facility that can support all of these experiments at reasonable cost. I think that in the days of the original planning, we were trying to be very creative, but we were also making some compromises. Now, one of the reasons that we were making a compromise in the early days of the design of Genie is that we were exploring the option of a source of funding called MREFC. And MREFC was a particular funding source with a particular set of constraints. And one of the constraints of the MREFC process is that they had to see the thing that was being built as a single unified facility. You couldn't take three things, put a bow around them, write Genie on the outside of the bow, hand it to them and say, fund this. They'd say, no, that's three things, not one. You're trying to fool me, go away. And you couldn't get access to the money. Now, at this point, I don't know what the different NSF program officers and NSF folks in the room would say, but certainly when I've talked to Jeanette, she said, stop thinking about MREFC as a source of funding, which means that constraint, that the thing we had to design had to look like a single integrated facility from the perspective of the MREFC office at NSF, that constraint's been removed. And I think that allows us to reconsider some of the assumptions about what Genie is. Is it one kind of architecture with one kind of management tools and so forth? Is it some parts that are a little more diverse and heterogeneous, tied together in various ways? Perhaps we could get a better set of outcomes. We could get an infrastructure that could support a wider range of experiments if we go back and evaluate some of the design objectives, knowing that this constraint, which was imposed programmatically because we were trying to get MREFC funding, that constraint has now been removed. Now, again, a few more background comments. We understand what the center of a network looks like. We understand what routers look like and fibers look like, and there's a sort of a gravitational pull toward building a network by beginning in the center and working out. And there are some of us who want to mess around in the center of the network, but I want to remind everybody the real excitement is at the edge. This is where the world's going to look really different in 10 years. It's going to be new kinds of devices, mobile devices, embedded devices. It's going to be new kinds of networks, wireless networks of all kinds. It's going to be things like cars that are driving around with networks inside them, other kinds of mobile networks. And if you want to inspire people to build networks for the future, you have to both enable them to experiment with this kind of excitement at the edge and also put it in their face. You have to remind them that that's what the future is going to look like. And living in the future is extremely hard. There was a glorious period in computer science research when you could live in the future by staying up later than anybody else, and then everybody went home and you could grab the entire time-sharing system for yourself. And there was this poignant comment, I think it came out of Xerox PARC, which is, the nice thing about a personal computer is it doesn't run faster at night. But the flip side of that is, with a personal computer, it's really hard to live in the future because it's hard to put a supercomputer inside it to understand what it's going to look like 10 years from now. And I think that there's a real challenge when you look at the range of experiments that people want to do as to how we emulate all the parts of what we think a future world is going to be. And if you believe that the mantra of Genie is slices everywhere, which is a slightly more general statement than virtualization everywhere, perhaps, there's some components which I think it's harder to figure out how to virtualize. And I think, again, I'm posing this as a question, how much does this matter in terms of supporting the experiments we really want to do? Remember, as I said, the goal here is, at least for certain classes of experiments, reaching real users. Now, if I said that the excitement is the edge, the other thing I want to say is that the excitement's at the higher levels. I think that a lot of people have this gravitational pull toward the thing that's familiar, which is, well, packets and routers, but get yourself up to the level of the applications. What are the design patterns for future applications? There are people in Find who are thinking about this. I'm thinking about it. What is it? Is the word cloud computing merely hypeware, or is there something serious going on in there? Highly distributed applications. And what I might call, well, again, to use another hype word, sort of middleware kinds of things, identity frameworks, location frameworks. Now, here's a very important question. For people who want to experiment at this level, to what extent can these experiments be done on the existing packet-level internet? And I think that's an important question because, as I'm going to point out, there's a wide range of experiments that people have put forward, and we have to decide whether we're going to address all of those with a particular kind of infrastructure. So let me just try to push a little bit on the center of focus of the future research. There are clearly some people who are saying, I want to run new protocol stacks. I don't want the TCP of the future to look exactly like TCP. The reasons, I want to stress, have nothing to do with the ability of the data plane to deliver packets. We deliver packets real well. The issues that come up in at the transport level, I think, are going to have to do with things like security and authentication, preventing intrusion attacks. People are going to put boxes in the network which act as, for example, security perimeters, and then you have to ask about soft state in those boxes. How is the state maintained? And this is going to involve interactions that mean we have to put different kinds of information in stuff we send out. And I think people want to play with new packet headers. Not IPv4, not IPv6. I will give you an example of that in a minute. So this implies that if you want to make Genie easy to use, for at least some class of experimenters, facilitating the ability to replace the protocol stack in the end node is a very important capability to focus on, because it's hard. And we might take a decision, for example, which is people who use Windows need not apply. I don't know whether we would accept that. It's obviously easier to replace the protocol stack in a Linux machine than it is in a Windows machine. But of course, don't think PC. Think mobile devices. Can I replace the protocol stack in this, which is actually a pretty closed device? No, this is not an iPhone. Remember, we want real users, and I think there's a real tension here. If the only way you can reach the real users at the edge is by running TCP, and IP, and then somehow converting at some intermediate point into what you might call the Gini world, how much have we compromised the experiment? Clearly, in an ideal world, we wouldn't do that because it's going to have at least some distorting effect on the experiment. Now, having said that the excitement's at the top, there's an obvious question of, well, why do we want to do any experimentation at the lower level? And I think there's two reasons, and one of them is we actually need to do a better job of supporting applications. Now, this has nothing to do, as I said, with hauling packets around. The data plane works great. The issues that come up in this space are issues with respect to a future network architecture, issues of security, availability, network management, economics and industry structure, and what happens there will influence and be influenced by the design of applications. So the stuff that some set of people want to do at a lower level and the stuff that other people are doing at an application level really do interact. Now, there are some things which at the lower level we just didn't get right. And I could give you an example of that. I'll give you an example of that in the next couple of slides. Maybe that kind of work would be a little more independent. So let me see if I can illustrate that. But I just want to make this point. People have said to me, why isn't IPv6 good enough for the indefinite future? And some people were really surprised that having spent 15 years trying to get IPv6 in place, I want to remind people that the call for the development of IPv6 was in an RFC written in 1991. Okay. You know, my point of view is, well, what are we going to be arguing about 15 years from now? And other people say, well, you know, I'm a pessimist, I'm discouraged, we haven't gotten IPv6 done, wring your hands. And no, we're going to be optimists, and we're picking now what we're going to be arguing about 15 years from now, and it isn't IPv6. So here's the kind of things that I think we don't have right today. These are, as I say, lower-level issues, like congestion and its control, different kinds of addressing modes. There's no reason to think we have addressing right in the internet today. There's no reason to think we have routing right in the internet today. You know, there are people I could produce who would say, well, for a sufficiently topologically rich network, you don't need a routing protocol. And then you could put them back in the box and you could produce a different person who would say, routing in the future won't have AS boundaries in it. And you say, okay, fine. All of these will imply things, for example, about how addressing looks. There's going to be a lot of work on new mechanisms for security that I think will affect what's carried at the packet level. There are going to be issues in network management. I could give you some specific examples, but we're going to run out of time here. Perhaps some issues for tracking payment, that's debatable, but all of these will influence what's actually in the packet. And I want to stress, again, if you are really trying to work on issues like addressing and security and management, ideally, the capabilities would reach all the way to the edge of the experiment, which is I want these non-IP sorts of packets to get all the way to the end node device where they can be processed in this non-standard protocol stack. So now let me talk about putting functions in the network. And what do I mean by functions in the network? Well, you know, we think of the network in a simplistic way today as being full of routers. But in fact, the network today is full of all kinds of complicated things. It's full of security enforcement devices. I mean, firewalls, but if you look at the future, there are these ideas of indirection architectures and capability-based architectures where there are things that get checked. There are encryption devices in the network. You could imagine somebody trying to build a secure region of the network by saying that all the packets that come here get processed and munged in various ways, and then we encrypt them so that the environment that we're running between these trusted nodes, it may be susceptible to denial of resource attacks, but you really can't break into it. There are deep packet inspection devices. There are devices which are based on the presumption that we're going to be moving application functions into the network. That is to say, these are the anti-end-to-end folks. I assume we haven't just thrown them out of the room prophylactically, right? They have a seat at the table. And what this says is that the boxes on which the experiments are going to run need to be fairly powerful general-purpose devices. If you look today at a box in the network which does high-speed encryption, it probably has in it different silicon, which is optimized around the goal of doing encryption. Most routers today do not have lots of disk storage on them for perfectly good reasons. Now, today, when you build a real network, you come up with your architecture, and then you go put the encryption boxes where you want them, and you go put the router boxes where you want them, and you put the boundary checking boxes where you want them. But if Genie is this general purpose environment, and then you just go requisition facilities, then the question is, are the general purpose boxes that are out there in the middle of Genie powerful enough that they can play all of these roles? Now, I think we ought to look at that fairly, because one answer is no, that Genie is a facility that solves the really hard part of deploying an experimental infrastructure, which is, well, you know, like how do we manage fibers and so forth and so on, but it could be that one point of view is, yeah, and then if you want your experiment to look a little weird, you go put some things in racks in 25 places, and you actually slide hardware in, and you actually do an experiment by augmenting the Genie infrastructure, which technology, which is purpose-built for your experiment, and by the way, it's not sliced, and it's not virtualized. Now, I don't know whether that idea at the moment is on the table or off the table, but I think that when you ask how general the nodes should be out of which we're building Genie, you need to ask whether or not you think they're sort of perfectly general, or we need to have the ability to supplement them with experiment-specific devices. Okay. Now, I want to talk for a minute about emulating a real network, because I think that there's sort of a fork in the road, and if I can refer back to Yogi Berra, there's another favorite quote of mine that comes from him, which is, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. And I want to point out that real networks today, deep down inside, are not built out of things that forward packets. They are built out of fibers that have lambdas on them, and the lambdas are probably hooked to things like MPLS switches, and the MPLS switches do some routing at the lambda level, and then the lambdas attach to routers. And in fact, in a really big network today, people try to use as few routers as possible with, all due respect to my friends at Cisco, router ports just cost a whole honking lot. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff down below the router level. And a lot of academic research presumes that routers are sort of talking together, and that's really what's going on. But if you look at the complexity issues and the cost issues in building a really large net today, people accept the complexity of having this multi-layered architecture in exchange for the cost benefit of using lower cost components like lambda switches, ROTEMs, which do lambda add drops and so forth. So now here's an interesting question. I think there's a fundamental research challenge for the future of the internet, and the research question is, how should we better integrate together the management of all these layers? Now, if that's a research question, then should you be able to experiment with that question using the infrastructure of Genie? Now, in the early days of the Genie description, in fact, there was a rather sophisticated optical core to Genie. There were things like ROTEMs, which is an optical add drop module, R for remote, I think. But I think there were two implications of the original design. One of them is, this made Genie really expensive, because you were now talking about a network. It doesn't make any sense, by the way, to buy a ROTEM, which can manage networks at the lambda level, if you can already afford to have one lambda between your nodes, right? So there was a tension. Well, how many lambdas are you going to get? Because a typical commercial ROTEM today, by the way, would handle 40 to 80 lambdas. Okay, that's the scale of a real network today. But I don't think NSF is going to buy us 40 to 80 lambdas. Okay, so how are we going to experiment with this stuff? There was another problem, which is, it was actually really hard to figure out how to virtualize a ROTEM. Now, somebody in the room may, when I come to the question, say, no, I understand exactly how to virtualize a ROTEM. You just are out of touch. You haven't paid attention for the last year, and I'd love to hear that. But if you looked at the original design as put forward in the pre-GPO phase, there were ROTEMs, but in fact, they plugged into packet switches, because packetization and the time domain slicing was really the way that people understood how to virtualize resources. But ROTEMs aren't packet devices. Okay, so what does it mean to virtualize a lambda? And I think that question, people actually never came up to face that elephant and said, we're going to do it this way. Okay. But I think we need to decide in Gini whether the goal is to emulate at least how real networks look today, or whether we're going to leave the bottom part as just sort of a rough simulation on top of which higher level experiments. Now, here's a fork in the road. Do we want to take it? One fork in the road is to say, well, how many people actually want to go off and play with ROADMs and MPLS switches and cross-layer management and all that kind of gluck? It might be a very small set of people. So build something for them. And by the way, it probably doesn't have to have as complicated a management architecture, because there are probably not 10,000 of these people. And then for people who wanted really large-scale experiments, they wanted to try to get close to real people, maybe we could build that testbed out of packets. And now I would ask this as an open question. You just heard Chip talking about the fact that the current approach is to build VLANs, which is its Ethernet frames. I think we should ask, well, what's the difference between tunneling packets around inside Ethernet frames and tunneling packets around inside IP frames? I ask that as an open question. I'm not saying I know the answer. I can't tell from looking at the research proposals that I'm seeing in FIND how important that distinction is. I want to stress that this split, this fork in the road, raises a lot of limitations, and you might accept them, but you have to look them square in the face. So let's talk about it. If you have a part of the network or a part of Gini that folds the optics in, it is realistic, but we have to ask for what class of experiment. If you want to do non-packet end-to-end services, there are people who want to do non-packet end-to-end services, and you could deal with them by simply escorting them out of the room and say, I'm sorry, you have to build something else. Okay. But they exist. If you preclude that, you better consciously preclude it as opposed to accidentally precluding it. There are people who are interested in demonstrating new approaches to availability security management in which they are saying, I want my experiment to run on a realistic piece of infrastructure. The future is going to be running on fibers and lambdas, so I'd like to run on fibers and lambdas. And then there are people who are saying, I want to experiment with cross-layer protocol design. Now, as I pointed out, if you use packets and you tunnel them around, it's much easier to achieve scale, it's much easier to reach real users, but you have to simulate the lower level. Now, let me put this fork of the road in the worst possible way so that you can get the point. If you look at the internet today, we have a deeply wired presumption, which has sometimes been associated with this picture that we've drawn of the internet as an hourglass, where IP is this insulator between all the diversity that's down below. You got wireless and lambdas and MPLS and all that kind of crap. And IP insulates that from all of the stuff you do above, whether you run TCP, what kind of applications you run. And if you say that the Gini testbed is simply going to carry packets around, the risk is that what you have done is embed as a limitation in all future experiments the assumption that the future internet will have will have that narrow point in the hourglass at the same place. You can't do cross-layer alternative designs which try to reach down past the packet abstraction to anything that's underneath, whether it's novel wireless technology or anything that has to do with lambdas, if in fact the Gini infrastructure involves a packet level abstraction as the lowest thing you can see. Okay. And I think that accidentally baking the hourglass into Gini, and as a result, baking it in as a design constraint in people's thinking about future network architectures is a bad thing to do. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't take the road. What it means is take this fork in the road, that I think you have to figure out how to mitigate this explicitly and think that through. Let me press on, because I'm going to run out of time here. I got another 15 minutes or so. As I said, I think the data plane of the current internet works great. We haul packets around. We support a wide range of applications. I don't think that Gini is trying to mitigate some problem that has to do with the way we haul packets around. I think that one of the most important issues after security, which is always first on my list, is about how you manage the network, not about how you run the data plane. And I keep reminding people, when you talk about taking the resources in Gini and virtualizing them, I want to make sure that you virtualize the management aspect of the network and not just the data plane. Now let me give you an example of what I mean there, just to make this concrete. Go back to my picture a little while ago of these real layers where you have routers that think they are talking to each other over an abstraction, but the abstraction has actually been built out of MPLS technology, which is in fact not directly connected. It's an abstraction built out of ROADMs. And you get down to the lambdas, which are in fibers, which are in binder groups, which are in tunnels, right? And then you have a Baltimore fire, and it burns up a whole bunch of bundles, which means it burned up a whole bunch of fibers, which means it burned up a whole bunch of lambdas, which means it disconnected some MPLS networks, which means that some routers were all of a sudden disconnected. Well, if you're the router manager guy, you're sitting in front of your router management box, and all these little nodes turn red, and you say, oh my God, my routers can't talk to each other. How do you figure out what actually failed? Well, this is anti-computer science. Fault diagnosis is anti-computer science because computer science is taking a complicated thing and wrapping an abstraction around it to make it easy to understand. But fault isolation is ripping the abstraction off and saying, okay, what actually failed? Because routes between routers are abstractions. They only fail when some underlying physical component fails. You got to dive down through the layers. You go down, 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 until eventually you come to the physical thing that failed. It's a backhoe. It cut a binder group. It cut a bundle of fibers. It's a fire. Okay, somebody shot my satellite down, whatever it is. Okay, a bird flew into my antenna. Okay. If you want to experiment with things like fault diagnosis, what does it mean to be running on top of a virtualized infrastructure? For example, if you're in Genie and a physical link in Genie, perhaps Genie has lambdas, and a physical lambda fails, okay, what happens? Okay. Every experiment that's sitting on top of Genie that's using that link will see that a link failed. They think that their job, assuming they're focusing on management and not data forwarding, is to diagnose the fault. But the fault is no longer a component which is physical with respect to them. It is a virtual component, which has in fact been virtualized using yet another layer of abstraction which they can't see because it's outside their slice. So what does it mean to build an architecture in which we can experiment with things like virtualization. I'm sorry, fault isolation. Let me give you another example. ROADMs give you the ability to rapidly reconfigure where your lambdas go. And I think that one of the research challenges for the future is to integrate together into one blob what we do today as routing, which we assume runs on a short time scale, what today is called traffic engineering, which occurs on a medium time scale, and in fact, then out of that comes requirements for new physical resources, like could you hire a backhoe, please, and put some more fibers in this particular space here. Now, how, if I'm experimenting with that kind of stuff in Genie, do I reconfigure my lambdas underneath my packet forwarding? Well, there's basically two answers, and one of them is at the beginning of the experiment, I requisition all the lambdas I could possibly want, and then they are sort of inside my world, and then inside my slice, I experiment with reconfiguring those lambdas, which is to say that my ROADM, my virtual ROADM, is entirely inside my experiment. Or you could say, no, we have to emulate that. We can't do that inside your slice. When you want to reconfigure your lambdas, your slice actually has to reach out and connect to the clearinghouse. So it's not a human anymore talking to the clearinghouse, it's my slice talking to the clearinghouse saying, can I please rearrange the lambdas that are underneath my experiment? Okay. Now, I don't know whether this is the right way to think about it, but that's the degree of controllability that a future network is going to have, and I'd like to make sure that people can do experiments in that space. The tagline that I've been using here is, we keep talking about we want real users, I want to see what happens when we have real operators. I think that if you take my management challenge and you generalize it, you see that when you look at these issues like management and security, I actually think it's less clear how to virtualize the experimental infrastructure to allow these to be demonstrated than it is to virtualize the data plane. But don't focus on the data plane because that's the part that works right today. Focus on these other things. Okay. Now, I want to say a few words about scale. As I said, we asked all of the FIND researchers to write little essays explaining what they wanted to do, and some of them in their essays sort of explained the size and scope of the experiment they wanted to do. Somebody wrote an essay about hundreds of routers and hundreds of fixed in nodes and, you know, n times hundreds of mobile devices, and one person said thousands of interconnected devices, Interestingly, most of these people who were concerned with scale were not concerned about speed, but I had a reaction when I looked at these. These are minuscule scale. Why did these people say such small numbers? And I think the answer is that before they wrote this essay, they negotiated with themselves. And there's an old saying, it's stupid to negotiate with yourself, right? They didn't ask for what they wanted. They asked for the biggest thing they thought they could get without making idiots of themselves. Okay. What does real scale in the internet look like? Let's be clear, what does real scale look like, right? Well, we have, what, 25,000 autonomous systems today? I think 25,000 is about right. You're finding large networks that have 100 parallel striped lambdas at 10 gig each, right? And if you say, well, I want to build a box that brings 100 lambdas inside and 100 lambdas, you're talking building boxes that have huge numbers of ports on them. Now, you might say, no, that's outside scope of Genie. We're not going to worry about that. I ain't going to build honking big switches as part of this experiment. And that's fine if you can convince yourself that by leaving that out, you haven't actually eliminated a lot of the architectural experimentation. I'm concerned with millions of multi-homed end nodes. I think you have to be clear that it's not just scale, it's heterogeneity in the experience. And I think across this space, we have to ask, how are you going to validate ideas at this scale? Is that what Genie is about? Or is Genie about experimenting at very small scale? Somebody once gave me an old saying, and I don't know whether it's true. He said, if your experimental environment cannot get up to within one order of magnitude of what the real world looks like, there's a real chance you're not going to learn what you really need to know. If you're three orders of magnitude off, you're just in the wrong ballpark. So can we get within one order of magnitude of what the real world looks like? I think that's actually very challenging, and it may impose constraints in other directions. Now, reading these essays, there were some specific things that came up, and I just thought I'd mention them. I'm getting near the end. Yes, I am. Rich connectivity. There are people who want to experiment with novel routing. What they want to see is a connectivity graph that looks not like the routing graph of the present internet, but the connectivity graph. In other words, if you were trying to tunnel over the internet, they don't want to just see the internet routes. It's like overlays. They want to find routes that the routing protocol is not finding for you. They want to emulate multiple regions. I mean by regions, they mean things like autonomous systems. And they said, well, I guess I can see how to do that on Genie, because they're looking at the slice religion. And so they said, well, I'll grab one slice, and that's for my autonomous region. And then I'll grab another slice, and that's for this other autonomous region. And then I'll manage my slice, and you manage your slice. One of the implications of this, of course, is that you need high bandwidth paths between slices, because slices are now autonomous systems, and therefore your slices have to use the current internet vernacular, your slices have to peer. So there is a requirement for high bandwidth paths among slices. At the same time, if I'm doing a security experiment, I want a heavy-duty insulator among slices. Okay. But you're not going to do it by eliminating the paths, because for other experiments, you've got to have high bandwidth peering paths between the slices. There are people who've said location is going to be, physical location, not location in cyberspace, but location on the face of the Earth is going to be a critical feature of tomorrow's architecture. All devices in Genie should be able to tell you where they are. There are people that said encryption is going to be a universal. Any device in Genie ought to have encryption capability because we're emulating the future. And then there are people who say, look, I'm interested in virtualization not as a tool for building Genie, but because I think it's the right way to build the network of the future. So my architecture that I'm going to deploy is going to be a virtualization architecture. So did we just do recursive virtualization? I'm not sure. But don't forget, there are experimenters out there who want to put forward the proposition that tomorrow's architecture is one based on virtualization. Now, maybe they say, I'm going to do those experiments by helping to build Genie, and then Genie is actually the infrastructure of the future. Well, maybe that's the way out of that box. I don't know. Chip talked a little bit about instrumentation and measurement, and he said it was, I think the word he used was murky, the word I used was confused. Everybody says we've got to gather data on how experiments are done, but I think there's some confusion in people's mind about what aspect of data gathering is done in the infrastructure and what is done in the slice. Again, if I'm interested in an architecture which eventually runs on things like lambdas, then any architecture for managing data has to be within my slice. And you could say, that's right, yes, but you don't actually have real lambdas, you have these virtual things, which means that we need to take perhaps the data gathering elements, the very low level probes, and we have to virtualize them, right? so that I get my virtual slice. I don't know whether that's the way people are thinking about it, but it's clear that if somebody's going to put forward a future internet architecture, that architecture has to include native capabilities for instrumentation. You can't assume that you'll always be running on top of a genie unless that's your proposition about the shape of the world, and not everybody has that proposition. I don't think data is something generic that's shared. This idea that we're all going to be pooling data, I think data is in slices, and the data in slices is probably going to stay inside the slices, okay, because it's going to be meaningful only within the context of that slice. Let me tell you some things we took off the table earlier just to make sure that you understand. We didn't ask for the sun and the moon and the stars. We only asked for the moon and the stars. We didn't want satellites. Really long latency, but we couldn't figure out that it was a sufficiently distinct challenge. There were people put forward that said, Genie is not complete unless it has a residential access network in it. Let's do fiber to the home. Let's go wire up a community. We looked at that. We said it's a challenge. We didn't think it was sufficiently distinctive. We also knew that it was going to be honking hard, okay, and cost a lot of money. The hypothesis was the excitement's in wireless nets, the excitement. We know we're going to have high bandwidth links to end nodes in places like campuses. That's probably good enough. You can tell me whether you think I'm right. So let me come back, and this is my last slide, to what I call the experimental landscape. I think what we learned from Planet Lab is that what I've been calling at the sort of distributed application level, that there can be thousands of experiments. Planet Lab was just amazingly successful at letting lots of people, and fairly easy, you know, one faculty member and a grad student deploy an experiment. I think that's just an incredibly powerful thing. We should never lose track of that. Now you might ask, so how many folks actually want to try out a new internet? How many people want to replace IPv4, want to go down and wrestle with ROADMs and so forth? That could be a very small community, right? There might be a, you know, you could count on one hand the number of people who put large proposals into NSF to do that. That's why I say maybe there's a fork in the road that we need to understand, which is to have different sort of tools for experimental deployment at different layers. And when I say one genie or many, I don't mean that we should partition this room into two groups that never talk to each other anymore. There's going to be a lot that we could do to integrate these infrastructures, but they might have different scales, they might have different capabilities, and this sort of what I would call, you know, it's sort of like turtles all the way down, you know, if you've read Discworld. Do we do virtualization all the way down? Do we do programmability all the way down? There's a price associated with that generality, and you really have to ask how many experiments want it, and are there, in fact, subclasses of experiments that could benefit from different subclasses of Genie? That's what I take out of the range of things that I hear coming out of Find. So let's see who wants to throw a brick at me. Stunned into silence. If you don't ask me a question, you have to eat lunch. Come on, come on. Somebody must want to argue with me. Yada-da. I can't, sir, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I can't point. I'm sorry, this is a terrible problem.
I'll wait for the microphone to talk, if that's okay. Yeah, so two very closely related questions. Thanks for this presentation, very much enjoyed it. First, do you, in your personal opinion, do you see an important distinction in the academic research agenda in this area as compared to the industrial research agenda in this area? And if so, do you think there's merit in articulating the difference?
There ought to be a distinction. Now, this is controversial. There ought to be a distinction. And the reason I say that is that once industry decides that it's got a problem that it's really got to solve, it can bring enough resources to bear on the problem that academics have to optimize themselves in a very particular way to be useful. My point of view is that academia should either be out in front of industry, or it should be going off down parallel paths that industry doesn't seem to be exploring now in order to put in place fallback positions in case the current track runs out of steam. And if you look at something like Find, which not everybody had to play by fined rules. I mean, NSF didn't put all the money in the fine bucket. It's always been lots of buckets. But, you know, when I talk to companies that, for example, either operators, network operators, or companies that supply equipment to them, and I say, blah, 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 15 years, blah, 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 they say, blah, 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 I guess that's really cool. Come back and tell me about it in 5 years. And I think that's fine. So I think each academic is going to position himself wherever in that spectrum that academic wants. And you can say, look, I have something that I think can be very rapidly transitioned in industry. I'm doing research that could perhaps lead to a startup, whatever it is you want to say. And other people could be saying, I want to be way out in front. I want to be off to the side. And that degree of flexibility and liberation is part of what you get by being an academic. So now I think perhaps the hidden question in your question is, and for what part of that spectrum is Genie suited? Right, because this is a Genie meeting, right? And clearly I always saw Genie as an infrastructure which, among other things, was supposed to have been inspired by FIND, which meant that it was supposed to be enabling people to experiment with things that involve living fairly far in the future. Now, you want to ask me a follow-up question after that? Or who else got the microphone? Sorry, somebody has to speak. Somebody got the microphone. I know somebody got the microphone. Oh.
Hi, I just want to probably ask a question. You mentioned the your view that the data plane is really not an issue for Genie. So I just want to say, you know, for some systems, like cyber physics systems, where you really have a closed system, but we are trying to support real-time system, real-time control in the presence of uncertainties and dynamics. For those systems, I feel even today, I think we don't have the solution for that yet to guarantee the enough service quality for real-time control. So I just think probably that should be part of the what we should think about as part of Genie, how to support experimentation for deploy and test services for those systems.
So I assume everybody could hear that, because once I got in front of the speakers, I could hear it. That's an area that probably warrants a longer side conversation. I've actually spent some time talking to people who are interested in real-time systems or systems suitable for cyber-physical control, and the conversation usually proceeds in several steps, and one of them is, well, you know, the internet's not real-time. And the answer is, well, you know, there was an amazing amount of research in the 1990s on just an amazing number of ways to do packet scheduling. And at one point, I heard somebody in SIGCOM say, we should never accept another paper on quality of service. So is the problem now that all those ideas were bad? Is the problem that we can't reduce them to practice? There was a workshop several years ago at SIGCOM called RIPQOS, at which our esteemed industrial colleague, Mr. Davey over there, pointed out that in private corporate intranets, the QoS stuff is being turned on. And I've asked the real-time community several times, well, is that what you're really worried about? And after you talk about it for a while, I come to the conclusion that just literally scheduling the packets so that you bound delay is actually a very small part of the problem. That what they're really concerned about, for example, is higher levels of assurance about availability in the face of failures than you can come up with today. The routing protocols don't converge fast enough. Maybe you need to be sending packets by multiple parallel paths. And actually, you think about how to send packets by multiple parallel paths, you say, well, yeah, that's an interesting little problem. But actually, the hard part of the problem is figuring out whether the separate paths you actually have are disjoint, which actually turns out to be back in a cross-layer management space. Because we have no way today to tell whether two separate paths at the IP level are actually in the same lambda, in the same fiber, in the same binder group, in the same tunnel. Okay. And except by burning the tunnel up and then seeing how many circuits went down, which is the experiment they did in Baltimore back a ways. So I'm very sympathetic to the objective of cyber-physical systems and controlling real-time systems. And to the extent the issues there involve messing around with the data plane, absolutely, you've got to do it. But I actually think when you push on the problem hard, you will discover that you can't actually meet the requirements of those systems unless you go look at some of the issues that have to do with the management aspects of availability and things that are not just about how you deliver packets in time. But that's probably a side conversation that we ought to have. I don't mean to rule out the data plane. All I'm saying is if that's the only place you put your attention, you may actually miss what it means to meet some of these real requirements in the future. Who's got the next mic out there? Aaron.
Yeah, so thank you, Dave, for a very interesting, your usual high-quality talk. When I was a teenager, we used to play a game when we went to the Chinese restaurant. You'd get a fortune cookie, and you'd add "in bed" to the end, and everybody would laugh. It would make it more humorous. And what I found is in conversations like this, you could say "at scale" to anything, and you'd make the problem harder. And you could add it to just about anything. And so one of the most interesting topics that you brought up was the issue of real operators and virtualizing management interfaces and all the issues that brings up. And I'm wondering do you really think that for the kinds of experimentation that you're hearing about in Find, do you need to do that at scale? Do you think that all of the infrastructure needs to have that in order to be interesting and useful?
The answer is I'm not quite sure. I think a lot of the management problems only come into focus at scale, which causes me initially to say yes. I don't know how much creative compromise could be in that space. I don't quite understand. I'm very concerned about availability. Slight digression. I'm very concerned about availability. I'd like to be able to demonstrate a network that actually has another 9 or 2 compared to what the internet has today. If you go ask, why does the internet actually fail today? There are a couple of studies that say that between 30% and 50% of all internet outages are called by operator error. So unless we can really demonstrate that we can make the operator's life an order of magnitude easier, I don't know how I can actually demonstrate that I can drive another 9 or so into the availability of the internet, because we have to make it possible for operators not to, you don't beat them with sticks, and you don't need to, and you can't send them off to get PhDs. You just have to make this thing better. Can I do these experiments at small scale? I stand ready to have that conversation, but my initial instinct is no, because I don't think you'll learn what you need to learn.
We have one last question back here.
Got one way in the back. Yeah.
Okay. I agree with your point that supporting different packet formats, that is a very good idea, especially thinking about future cellular network, which evolves very fast. The question is, in the current Gini program, is supporting different packet formats a requirement or just a suggestion?
I believe I know the answer to that question, but notice my talk was about requirements, and as a result I raised questions about Gini. My understanding in the current spiral is that one of the motivations for using Ethernet-level VPNs was to allow you to haul around packets that didn't look at all like IPv4, IPv6 packets. So the current Gini architecture clearly assumes that at the bottom the abstraction you're sitting on is a packet abstraction, but I thought the format was up for grabs. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. And Aaron says yes, that's right. So Gini does not require that you use current format packets. Now there's an interesting question. From the point of view of the experimentalist, what impairments in the experiments arise if you hauled your new kind of format packet around inside an Ethernet frame as opposed to hauling it around inside an IPv4 or 6 packet? And I think that's one that you can only answer by actually putting some more specific criteria to help evaluate that question. Okay, are we done?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, a couple of logistical things before we break for lunch. As some of you may have noticed, we ran a little bit long in the morning. So lunch is going to run from now until 1 o'clock. Remember, there's also the international BOF lunch, which is in the tenor room, which is at the door and to the left. Then from 1 o'clock to three, there are going to be cluster meetings. These are really intended to be team meetings for the individual clusters. We've left it up to the clusters to decide whether those meetings are going to be open or closed. So I wouldn't plan on attending unless you talk to somebody involved if you're not already part of one of those teams. But we resumed the meeting here at 3:30 until 5:30 with working group meetings. They're actually going to be in three different rooms. On that topic, I'd like to ask a question. We might want to sort of rearrange where the rooms are based on attendance. Can those people who are sure that they want to be, that they're going to go to the control framework working group meeting this afternoon, raise your hand? Okay, so that looks like about half. Can those folks who are sure that they are planning on going to the experimental workflow and services meeting this afternoon, raise your hand? Okay, so that looks like maybe 20 folks. People who are going to the substrate meeting this afternoon? Okay, so it looks like about half are going to go to control framework and half to the other two meetings, and the rest of you will be pick something that looks interesting to you. Okay, so I'll just look for the signs outside the doors. We might move the meetings around, but they're all going to be in this area here in one of the ballrooms. So thank you very much, and we'll see you when we reconvene at 3:30.